Ford and myself, Senator Cowdery, have three bills up today. Senate Bill 358 is the name of the state parish. Senate Bill 100, electric personal vehicles and the registration, and House Bill 405, crimes against state vessels. First one up is going to be the naming of the ferries. I don't know if you, any members have had an opportunity to read the packet, but it went out to some school kids, and they wrote some essays and this and that, and it's, they did a pretty good job. And they named one of the winner of the contest was for the name Fairweather. It's a pretty good analogy that Wesley did. And all, and Chenega was the other, named after Chenega Glacier. And anyway, it went through, and now we got a piece of legislation to make it legal. But that's enough of that, where we're at. So, it's, is there anyone here to testify on this? You're ahead, you know.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Kelly Huber, staff to Senator Halford. The bill was introduced through the Senate Rules Committee just as a formality. Senator Halford and the Speaker, as well as Lieutenant Governor Ulmer, were the judges for the contest in order to make this legal and have the ferries, the next two ferries on the production line named the Fairweather and Chenega. We need to just run it through the process and then have the governor sign it to become law. There was quite a few very good essays, I'll tell you. It was a real interesting. Kids all over the state participated, so.
Yeah, I had a chance to read these, and they were pretty, I was very impressed. So we have a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone else to testify here?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill number 358 out of committee as individual recommendation.
I hear no objection. The next bill up is going to be 100, Senate Bill 100. We have someone here from the sponsor's office again. And as I understand the bill, well, I'll let you explain the bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, again for the record, my name is Kelly Huber, staff to Senator Halford. I'm going to explain the bill, but I'm going to explain the CS version as we have put one in the packet and asked the committee to adopt it in place of the original sponsor substitute. This bill is actually introduced because of new technology. There is a new device that's called the electric personal motor vehicle assistive device that was unveiled in the fall of 2001. It's a clean fuel, quiet, upright, two-wheel tandem device that the senator has introduced the legislation to make sure that they will not be prohibited in areas of use, which they are only 15 miles per hour. And the idea is that they be used in pedestrian areas. And it just also says that registration licensure is not required. The part that the CS applies to, just so you know, there was another element of the original sponsor substitute that dealt with changes in statute concerning construction and farm vehicles, and that is removed from the new CS. And another part that's removed from the sponsor substitute in the CS is there was a section, too, that said the departments could not write regulation concerning this new assistive mobility device, and that has been withdrawn. So they can write regulations, they just cannot prohibit the use. And I do believe that the administration supports the legislation, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
This also includes, wheelchairs, electric motorized wheelchairs?
I don't think there's a problem right now with wheelchairs. The sponsor statement uses wheelchairs as an example of this mobility device may be very useful to senior citizens who may want to purchase one in later years and use it. It's got a gyroscope, so you stand on it and then you lean, and as you lean, it moves. It may be also very beneficial for those that have disabilities. Walking is difficult for them. So we wanted it to be treated more similarly to an electric wheelchair than any other type of transportation.
But a two-wheel, you're talking about a two-wheel.
It is, it's a two-wheel, and it's about the same width as an individual person.
But it's not an electric wheelchair as we...
No, not as you think of one. No, you stand on it.
I'd like to make note Senator Taylor is present. Is there any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of committee substitute. I'm going to adopt a committee substitute. I move to adopt a committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 100, date at 4402.
Any objections? Hearing none. Senator Elwood.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Kelly, I'm assuming that adopting this bill would preclude any municipality then from regulating the use of these devices on their sidewalks. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, we did not put in a municipal exemption area. And the idea was this is new technology. Let's see how it's handled. There's not going to be many on the streets for a while. And should there be an issue later on that the municipalities want to deal with, then deal with that then instead of right now.
Hating to sound like the only conservative here, I mean, it seems to me that we wouldn't want government to mandate rules until there is a problem. And that almost seems backwards to me, that you're saying, well, there may or may not be a problem, but we're going to allow it anyway. The concern that I have, quite frankly, is that anybody who has tried to negotiate the sidewalks in downtown Juneau during the cruise ship season, my community has banned, for example, the use of skateboards. These devices under the 15 miles per hour travel five times faster than a normal person walks and probably 10 times faster than a cruise ship passenger ambles through the community. And it just seems to me, I'm having a difficult time, I guess, with the concept that state government is going to tell municipalities how to regulate traffic in highly congested areas.
Mr. Chairman, it's not that we disagree with you. We're just not sure that there will be any problems with this. Electric wheelchairs go on the sidewalk, that type of thing. And so it's not that we disagree with you or in the management or municipal government. It's just that at this point we don't foresee problems, and that's where the position was taken.
I guess the last comment I'd have, and there's no need to respond because I'm not sure that we'll come to an agreement on this, is that if in fact there is a problem, it means that municipalities are going to have to come back to this body and ask to have this statute amended so that they can deal with the problem.
Does the state have, maybe I asked one of the members here, does the state have jurisdiction over, municipality right-of-ways that there's no state money involved? Do they have that kind of jurisdiction? Anybody know that?
They do.
Yeah, they do.
I'm just curious.
We're going to allow them onto those precious bike paths that nobody can use anything on today? I mean, you wouldn't mind a friendly amendment, would you, including snow machines?
Electric powered.
Yeah. Interesting.
Is there any other questions? Hearing none, what's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Is there anyone else here to... Oh, excuse me. We got somebody else here to testify. I'm sorry.
I'd like to play with one of these.
My name is Dennis Harris. As Senator Elton can tell you, I've been very active in the cycling community in Juneau. And I'm very concerned about this. I'm very concerned for several reasons, one of which is we already have too many conflicts on our multiple use paths. As someone that cycles frequently and on a number of multiple use paths, not just here but in Anchorage on the coastal path up there, I can tell you they're already pretty congested. On sidewalks, particularly in downtown Juneau, we have a real problem already with just people. There's a good reason why state law and most city codes prohibit operation of bicycles on sidewalks by anyone over 12 years old, and that's because bicycles move at a much greater speed than pedestrians. It's the reason why Juneau has decided to prohibit the use of skateboards in a good part of our downtown core area for the same reason. A lot of elderly people are very afraid of kids on skateboards or kids on bicycles on sidewalks, and for very good reason. Anyone with osteoporosis or who is aging knows how long it takes broken bones to heal, and that if you fall down and break your hip, you may never get out of bed again. And that is another problem. My biggest concern about this is that these devices are not even being delivered to commercial users at the present time. The first orders will be going out to organizations like UPS and FedEx for commercial use here in about the next 6 months. The company does not expect them to be in general use for at least 2 years. And they're engaged in a giant lobbying push all across the country in every state to exempt these from regulations completely. That's what this bill does, and it's wrong. Quite frankly, we should allow some experience with these vehicles before we decide what kind of regulation to do. But in my opinion, they should not be. This bill essentially prohibits cities from prohibiting their use on a sidewalk. I can just see the situation between here and the governor's mansion on Calhoun Avenue on that very narrow sidewalk, where someone is trying to zip along and get to work on their Segway at 15 miles an hour, and it's crowded with pedestrians in the morning trying to walk to work, and there's heavy traffic in the street. This is just not a good idea. And I think we need to wait and see what kind of experience we can have with these vehicles. The other thing that occurs to me is that people just aren't aware of the mass of these things. They weigh 80 pounds. They're designed to carry a passenger. They look like a lawnmower in reverse. That's the only way I can describe it. It looks like you're riding on a lawnmower in reverse. They use a gyroscope. I've actually seen them on TV. They had them on the Tonight Show about 2 weeks ago. The inventor was showing them off. And they look like an interesting device. But they can go up to 20 miles an hour, depending on how the electronic device inside is set. The delivery devices are going to be set for 12 and a half miles an hour, but they can go as fast as 20. And I just think it's not a particularly good idea. I've got some pictures and some statistics from right off the company's website that I'll hand to Senator Taylor, and he can pass around. But there's a couple things that bother me. The promotion of this device has been disingenuous because they refer to a personal assistive mobility device, which sounds like something for the handicapped. But as someone who has a mother who's in her late 70s and has emphysema and arthritis, I can tell you, my mother at first thought this would be a great idea until she realized she'd have to stand up. And for someone with arthritis, which a lot of people who might need this kind of device who don't qualify for wheelchairs are, this wouldn't work. She wouldn't be able to make it to Foodland from her house on 12th Street, put it that way, because she would have to stop several times and find a place to sit down because for up to 20 minutes at a time because of the pain of her arthritis. I'm also concerned that that you're taking away local control over these kind of devices, and I think every community, I mean, Anchorage is different from Juneau. Skagway is different from Ketchikan. I think that we need to have local control over these kind of devices. Finally, I lost the citation I had, but I'm sure that someone's research could find it very quickly, or the folks at DOT here could tell you probably also. There's a federal law that financed most of the bicycle paths in the state, and in many cases, most of the pedestrian walkways that were built along, sidewalks included, that were built alongside highway projects, federal aid highway projects in this state. Under the federal law, this would not be legal. You cannot use any kind of motorized device on a sidewalk or a pedestrian way that was built with federal aid dollars that were set aside for that purpose. And I'd be happy to submit the correct legal citation in writing. I thought I had it with me today, but I don't. But it is indeed a federal law.
So how do you describe
the violation? Pardon?
How do you describe, you use the word multi-use paths?
Multiple-use paths are paths that are designed for non-motorized use, and that's exactly what the federal law says, too. And as a matter of fact, there was an ordinance in Juneau to allow the use of those motorized skateboards, the little putt-putt motorized scooters. They're almost like a skateboard, and you may have seen them. They look like the skateboard-type scooters, except they have a little motor attached to them. And there's only been one or two of them in Juneau, and somebody in the city government here got concerned and wanted to pass a bill or an ordinance regulating them. And in the course of researching it, we found that they were prohibited by the same federal law. Any kind of motorized device is not allowed on those paths. And so I would urge you to go very slowly on this, and certainly not just pass it out today. I think it needs further research, and particularly further research in the pedestrian conflict area. You've got, you know, these are designed to move at five times the speed of pedestrians, and while adults may handle them well, I think we all know what happens with kids and skateboards. The kids think they're fine and they're in control of the skateboard, but it sure scares the hell out of the elderly adults that have to deal with it.
Senator Taylor.
In the sponsor statement, it talks about the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has ruled this device is not a motor vehicle and should not be under their jurisdiction. And then at another place, I had read where there were other states. Let's see, to date, 12 states have signed similar legislation into law. 4 states have bills awaiting signature. How in the world could those states have enacted that law if, in fact, these things are being operated on those very same sidewalks, bike paths?
As whatever. Far as I know, the only thing that's going on with use at the federal level is a bill sponsored by Senator Bob Smith in New Hampshire, Senate Bill 2024. As far as I know, this is still prohibited by the U.S. Code. And if at least that's my reading of the U.S. Code, unless it's changed in the last 6 months or so. So I mean, I did online research, and maybe they're ignoring the federal law. I have no idea. I do know that this manufacturer has had a very aggressive lobbying push in every state, and they've hired a lobbyist in Alaska, too.
I imagine so. They want to sell their product, yeah.
Well, I think it might be a great idea for commercial use, for package delivery and that sort of thing, as long as it's running on the street but not on the sidewalk.
Thank you. Any more questions? We have others here to testify in the room. Dennis?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dennis Pichard. I'm with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I wasn't really planning to testify. The department doesn't necessarily have a position on this bill, but I thought I would try to clear up a couple of things that were said. And one of the things that the previous testifier mentioned is the motorized vehicle versus non-motorized vehicles. And I do want to point out that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which is part of the USDOT, has made a ruling, and they have determined this particular device to be a non-motorized vehicle. They've said it's not a motorized vehicle for the purposes of, federal, how the feds are going to treat it in terms of funding and whatever else. The other issue, though, that I wanted to try to at least point out that it's somewhat unclear is in Section 1 of the bill, where it says regulations adopted under this paragraph may not prohibit the use of an electric personal motor vehicle, that's certainly applying to the state that they may not prohibit by regulation adopted under the paragraph the use of those vehicles. But it doesn't say we can't regulate them. We can still pass regulations that would put some limitations on the use of them, I suppose, It just says we cannot prohibit them. And I'm assuming that those same laws under the Uniform Traffic Laws Act, that those same provisions would apply to local governments too, that they could regulate the use of them but not necessarily prohibit the use of them for those particular areas. So I just thought I would try and clarify that for the committee.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, you know, I'm right in assuming, though, Dennis, that if, in fact, the city of Juneau wanted to prohibit the use on our extremely crowded South Franklin Street, Front Street core area here, where it can sometimes take a half an hour to walk in the summer, walk up in the summer, and it might only take 10 minutes in the winter, that if, in fact, they said, well, you cannot use these on the sidewalks in the core area of Juneau during the summer tourism season, that the city of Juneau, the city borough of Juneau, would be precluded from implementing that because this is says that you cannot prohibit the use of these on sidewalks.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I'm not an attorney, and I don't want to get into trying to make a legal analysis of the question you're asking, but and my initial reaction was that essentially the local government may be able to further restrict them. I know there are certain traffic laws that local governments have adopted, particularly in Anchorage, that are more restrictive than what the uniform traffic laws are of the state. And I know that at least I'm not aware that they've been challenged anyway, but I don't know. I'm not an attorney. But then I was just talking with the Department of Law, and they pointed out Section 2801.010 of the Alaska Uniform Traffic Laws, which states the provisions of this title and the regulations adopted under this title are applicable within all municipalities of the state. So I don't know. I can see where you might get an interpretation from an attorney that could go either way, I guess.
Am I correct in when you're talking about Anchorage, you know, have some restrictions like truck routes and things like that? That, but isn't that due to the stability of the roads they go on more than it has does to, you know, I mean, some roads are not built for heavy trucks.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I think that's true. And there are other provisions, too, that I know the local governments adopted in Anchorage that are more restrictive than our uniform traffic control manual that we have.
Any questions, Senator Taylor?
Oh, I was just trying to think of ways we could, I mean, wrangle in the summertime and You could shoot a cannon down the street and not hurt anybody, probably. And if traffic, pedestrian traffic, is a problem for Juneau, maybe there's some way we could relieve some of the traffic, pedestrian traffic in Juneau and places in other communities. That might help relieve the problem.
I'm sure that'll be taken under advisement. Do we have others to testify here? We have someone from Mary. Are you online from DMV?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. This is Mary Marshburn. I'm the director for the Division of Motor Vehicles. I think that you are all familiar with the glitch in the law that requires a driver's license for a snow machine. And the House Bill 397, which seeks to fix that glitch for snow machines and other off-road vehicles or vehicles which are not designed for road use. As pertains to Senate Bill 100, the electric vehicle bill, for purposes currently, Alaska law would define these as motor vehicles. Because they do not meet federal safety and decent standards, they cannot be used on the roadway. They can't be operated on the roadway. The same glitch that requires a driver's license for a snow machine also technically requires a driver's license for a Segway. However, obviously, division, that's not been a priority for the division that worked for DPS, and the passage of 397 would correct that to remove the requirement for a driver's license on the vehicle sign to use on a roadway. That statement comes from Enter as well.
Is there any requirement for licensing of bicycles?
No.
There's none?
No.
Okay.
Chairman?
Senator.
Did you just say that...
Senator Ward.
Yeah, thank you. Did you say that it's your opinion that these would have to have a license to drive?
Mr. Chairman, very, very technically, because of the glitch in the law... Yes.
Well, you certainly have read it differently than I have.
To operate these.
Yeah, you certainly have read it differently than I have.
Do you consider... excuse me. Go ahead.
Can you... Maybe you could forward that on your opinion in writing so that I could look at it a little closer. Because it certainly doesn't seem to fit it the way I've read it.
And do you consider this a motor vehicle?
By state definition, it is a motor vehicle. It is a self-propelled device. Because it does not meet the federal safety and equipment standards, and that citation, the requirements for that is 13AAC04, it cannot be operated on the roadway. Just like a snow machine or other off-road vehicles that don't meet equipment and the safety standards set up by the Fed to allow them to be operated on a highway or a roadway.
Now, Ms. Truman, if I might.
Please.
Thank you. So you've read the committee substitute bill we just adopted, and it's your impression that this bill is asking for it to be operated on a roadway?
Mr. Chairman, I do not have a copy of the CS. I only have the original bill. I had asked for a copy of the CS to be faxed, but it has not come through.
Okay, and can you tell me if the previous one of the previous witnesses had mentioned skateboards that have little motors on them? Do you have? Excuse me.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you require those to have a license too?
No. Excuse me. No, we do not.
And why wouldn't you? No, no, just directly why, that's all.
A motor vehicle under the law.
Excuse me?
Does not meet the definition of motor vehicle.
But this does, even though the federal government has ruled it did not?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I've not seen the NHTSA ruling. My understanding of NHTSA ruling is that they determine their ruling of what is or isn't a motor vehicle has to do with the role that their agency plays in developing standards for vehicles. Does not have anything to do with the operation of the vehicle.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, one last time, I'll try this once again. If a motorized skateboard is motorized with a very small gas engine and it has a steering device on it, why would that not be considered a licensable vehicle and this be considered one?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that technically I can give you that answer, Senator Ward.
Well, if...
I know that it's not regarded as a motor vehicle.
And
I would emphasize that in the strict interpretation of the definition of a motor vehicle, it's what we're talking about for the Segway or the IT. Just as it was a very strict interpretation of the driver license law, which said it's required for a snow machine. That certainly was not the intent of the law.
But
Mr. Chairman, you're talking about, you know, a vehicle license versus a driver license.
Well, I think what Senator Ward is concerned is we just had a deputy commissioner, I think, up here, or maybe he's the commissioner, I don't know. I see more of him than I do anybody in DOT just said that under the federal guidelines, it was not a motor vehicle. Have you seen these vehicles and seen them in action or anything?
I've seen pictures of them, mm-hmm. but there are none, to my knowledge, there are none in Alaska.
I see.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, could you please forward on to the legislature how you arrived at the opinion that you would have to have a license to drive these?
We'll try to put it in words.
That would be good.
Send it to the committee here. Do we have anyone else here to testify on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 100 out of committee at the individual recommendation.
Object for the purpose of a proposed amendment, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I propose that on page 1, line 12, that following personal motor vehicle on A, that we insert the words state-owned and maintained, so that the scope of this law would be that the state can mandate that these can be used on state sidewalks, state vehicular ways, state bike paths, but that it preserves the conservative point of view that the best government is the government closest to the people, and it preserves the option of local governments to implement their own rules that work for their communities rather than have a state-imposed recipe.
I'd object.
Okay. Yes, Senator Taylor.
That's really underhanded. You're saying conservative.
Yeah, he is. He's to the right of me.
My colleague is always putting that position. I don't know. I'm personally more taken with this gentleman's testimony myself. I think these things are going to be difficult at best to navigate around. But I don't know that accomplishes all of your goal because state-owned and maintained, I don't know that the state actually does much maintenance on any of these facilities. So,
well, we've been talking about that for years.
Maybe somebody else could address that under discussion, and I'd certainly yield to Ms. Huber.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, can I offer a suggestion, perhaps, to your amendment?
Sure.
Being that what you're trying to do, which I understand, I think it would, though, be difficult to enforce because you have state roads that are maintained in cities, and then you also have municipality roads, and that would cause a lot of confusion and difficult to enforce. The committee meets on Thursday again, is that right, this week?
Right.
Does the committee meet again on Thursday?
Yes. Yeah.
Would you be willing to hold it and let's look at a municipal option thing if that's what is the main concern of other people too? We'd look at it with you. I mean, it's not where we were going with the bill, but if it's a major concern, maybe there's a way to make everybody happy. And I
appreciate the offer by the.
You know, and kind of look at the laws and kind of see if there's a way that we can work with your office and any other members on the committee that would have some concerns.
I just felt that it would the wording I didn't think would accomplish the purpose.
We can look at it, and I'd like to also take a look at the other states that have passed legislation. I think some of them have taken your concerns forward, so
that'd be great.
Would you want to do that?
We have a full calendar Thursday, but we'll get back at it if you know. I guess
I think if we can do it out of committee, yeah. We can do it pretty quickly between the senator and
we'll try to deal with it Thursday, if not the following.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I still have a motion on the floor because I do not want the Coastal Trail exempted from this. I want to ride one on it.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I would be willing.
My motion's still on the floor.
Mr. Chair, what I would suggest is that I don't have a problem with that. I think it's very generous of the sponsor's office to make the offer. And if, in fact, we can't come to some kind of an agreement, I mean, I might vote against moving it, but I certainly wouldn't try to get in the way of moving it. I would think that moving the bill, either amended or in its present form, would take a matter of less than a minute.
We have a motion on the floor. We have to do with it. Is the motion still?
Yes.
Actually, I still maintain my objection. I would speak to the objection.
Can we poll the members? On the motion, you want to restate the motion to pass?
To move the committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 100 out of committee with individual recommendations.
I object and would like to speak to my objection.
Can we roll call vote?
You don't want to listen to me speaking
to
the objection?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you objected the first thing. I thought it was going to be a duplication of what you said.
I just think that what we're doing here is we're imposing from big government to state the rules that the municipalities are going to have to live under. And I can tell you that in my community, this is going to create a big problem when you've got a motorized vehicle moving five times faster than I would walk and probably 10 times faster than a lot of the elderly gentlemen and ladies coming off the ship walk through a very congested downtown area is not going to work. It's going to create a hazard, and we've created a situation in which the municipality can't tweak the rules of the road for sidewalks in a way that makes things safe for our visitors and for our residents.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This legislation just says that you cannot prohibit them. It doesn't say you can regulate, can't regulate them. So it gives local control. It just says locally you can't say you can't have it on a coastal trail. It does not allow you to prohibit them. It doesn't say you can't regulate them.
We have a motion, and we had an objective to have a roll call vote.
Senator Warren?
Yes.
Senator Taylor?
Yes.
Senator Elton?
No.
Chairman Cowdery?
Yes.
I'll just note for the record that I'll work with Senator Elton and with staff, and we'll see if we can come up with an amendment that provides for some local option.
And for the committees, for the committee, it has passed out. I certainly will work with that floor amendment or the Rules Committee amendment, too. I just did not want to slow this process down. Yes.
Okay, the next one up is a Marine Highway bill. I see that we have our sponsor here, which I had told that I was going to hear this bill, and I'd like you to take note of that.
Thank you, Senator Cowdery. Appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. What this bill does, House Bill 405, it gives the state jurisdiction over our state-owned watercraft, including our watercraft that's outside of state waters. Recently, a Superior Court judge dismissed a prosecution for a sexual assault that occurred on one of our Alaska state-owned ferries while it was in the Canadian waters. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to read just a brief summary of that court case. See no objection to it.
Go ahead.
Last year, a young woman who was only 16 years old was sexually assaulted while she was on the Alaska ferry Matanuska en route from Seattle to Ketchikan. The ferry was in Canadian waters at the time of the assault. The district attorney in Ketchikan presented the case to the grand jury there, and the grand jury returned an indictment of one count of sexual assault in the first degree, one count of sexual assault in the second degree, and four counts of misdemeanor assault. Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, the court found that there was no statutory authority for the state of Alaska to prosecute the crime, even though the victim was Alaskan on an Alaska-owned state ferry. And under federal maritime law, the United States government has jurisdiction over crimes committed on United States vessels in Canadian waters. But the dismissal by the state court is a concern because the crime is unlikely to be prosecuted by the federal government and certainly is of very little interest to the Canadian government. The federal government does not generally prosecute offenses such as sexual assault, and the Canadian government has little interest in pursuing this since it was a state-owned ferry and it was an Alaska victim that it occurred to on the Alaska ferry. I believe, Mr. Chairman, it's prudent that we pass a law that specifically will give the state of Alaska the power to prosecute cases like this one and to protect and defend our passengers on our state-owned ferry system. Unfortunately, this is not an isolated incident, and it's not going to go away. Just as recently as December, 4 months ago, an intoxicated passenger attacked two crew members on one of our ferries, and with a vodka bottle, and caused some minor injuries. The passenger and charges were filed against this passenger, but the passenger has filed a motion to dismiss the case
based upon this sexual assault case that was dismissed last summer. Again, this occurred in Canadian waters en route between Prince Rupert and Ketchikan. So this bill is a very simple bill, and it's a very, of course, all bills are simple bills, but it's a simple solution to a very serious problem, Mr. Chairman. What we have here is a loophole in our law. And the bottom line is that if the Canadians won't and don't want to prosecute criminal activity that occurs on state-owned vessels in Canadian waters, and the federal government doesn't have the time or doesn't want to prosecute, then the state of Alaska should at least have the option to do so if we so desire. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the gist of the bill.
Senator Ward and then Senator Taylor.
Thank you. What was the name of the judge that ruled this in Ketchikan?
Senator Ward.
I thought it said Ketchikan here.
I think it was Judge Weeks right here.
What was the name?
Well, what I'd like, with your permission, Mr. Chairman and Senator Ward, this case was brought to my attention by the Department of Law and Annie. Capernetti with the Department of Law is here, and she could probably give more details than I have on the case.
Good, because I would like that. It seems like we might have a flaw in the court system.
Thank you. My name is Annie Carpenetti. I represent the criminal division of the Department of Law. It was just Judge Weeks who made the decision. He's a fine judge, and there is reason for his opinion. I mean,
sure.
It's not a decision that I mean, we are appealing his decision, but I think the most prudent approach is to pass a statute, which he invited in his decision.
Yeah, well, maybe. Mr. Chairman, yes. Were both of these citizens of the victim and the alleged victim and the alleged perpetrator, were they both American citizens and Alaska citizens?
Through the chair, the victim was is an American, and I believe she's an Alaska resident, lives in the Anchorage area. The defendant is an American. I'm not exactly sure what state he was in. He has been extradited to, I think, Idaho, but I'm not sure which state.
On which charge was he extradited on?
I don't know. It was a charge from the other state.
Charge from the other state.
He was extradited from Alaska on charges from brought in another state. And I'm sorry, I can find out for you what charges he was extradited on. But he has been indicted in our state.
On this charge?
Yes.
And he's been indicted on this charge, but yet the judge ruled he couldn't be indicted on this charge because there was no law for it?
Through the chair, the ruling stated that, and it was correct, that Alaska crimes are dictated by statute. We don't have common law crimes anymore in our state. We have statutory crimes, and we have statutory jurisdiction. And our jurisdictional statute allows us to prosecute crimes committed in our territory or committed outside of their territory when the effect is consummated in our state. This particular offense was committed outside of our territory and the harm occurred outside of our territory. For that reason, the judge ruled that we didn't have jurisdiction.
Chairman?
Senator Ward.
If we had a state-owned airplane that was flying out of Alaska airspace from the National Guard and it flew into Canada air, and one of the people within a C-130 was to sexually assault another member of the National Guard, both American citizens, would that not be prosecuted? Would that not be able to be prosecuted then? Or maybe say they're civilians, take away the military element. They're on a military plane.
Well, this bill doesn't address that particular issue. Although we do have state planes, they generally operate in state.
No, this one, it goes outside the air. So it goes outside the air, state-owned, just like a state-owned ferry. So they would not be breaking any law if somebody sexually assaulted somebody in a state airplane then.
Through the chair, it would depend on the circumstances. I'm sure they would be breaking somebody's law. They would probably be breaking federal law, and they would probably be breaking the law, if it's a sexual assault, of the territory in which it happened, in the airspace where it happened.
And it's this judge's opinion that the law wasn't broken because
there's no law.
There's no law on it?
Through the chair, it was his opinion that, although he didn't express an opinion of the particular offense, and he didn't The decision wasn't that a law hadn't been broken. It was just that we needed a statute on which to base our authority to prosecute the case because it occurred outside of Alaska territory.
Last question. So if, in fact, this hypothetical airplane I just described was flying outside of Alaska airspace into Canadian airspace and this sexual assault had occurred, would there not be any law to bring charges in that situation?
Through the chair, are you saying state of Alaska law or state of Canada law?
Apparently no laws are state of Alaska law.
Well, first of all, federal law would probably apply.
Okay, will federal law apply to this?
Through the chair, yes. The federal government has jurisdiction on United States flagged vessels. It is just generally the federal government does not pursue cases like this on ferries. They tend to pursue cases on airplanes. For example, the two women who were
the twins.
Mm-hmm. An airplane that landed in Anchorage, the first people on were from the federal government. And they took jurisdiction of that incident.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, it doesn't seem to be a problem with the airplanes. It seems like when something happens on airplanes, the federal government is right there to get them and to prosecute. It seems like since this is a state-owned ferry system, they just don't have that kind of level of interest that they do with the air transportation.
What about a cruise ship or a privately owned ferry system if there was such an animal?
Well, through the chair, the jurisdictional theory that this bill is based on is that a state-owned vessel has enough connections, is kind of like a piece of Alaska traveling through international waters. A vessel owned by another entity, a private entity in Canadian waters, would, you know, turn into the first port in Canada, I assume, and report it there. For Alaska ferries, it's a lot more difficult to go off course and go off schedule and go into a port that may not even be able to accommodate the vessel.
Senator Taylor.
Yeah. I am a little curious. This is being appealed.
Through the chair, yes, it is.
Because there had been a previous decision in Ketchikan by another Superior Court judge that had found jurisdiction and convicted someone of an offense on the ferries in Canadian waters.
Through the chair, I believe you're correct on that, yes.
That's why this decision was kind of considered unique or aberrant to the extent that probably nobody's raised the defense before aggressively. But I'm also curious as to why we are limiting it in this legislation to basically just ferries or water. I think Senator Ward has a good point in that what about the foreign flag vessel coming out of Vancouver bringing tourists to Juneau and someone is robbed or someone is raped on board that vessel? Do those vessels also, is there federal jurisdiction on that because they're in our United States waters? Or is there, I mean, if a crime occurs between here and the Canadian border, I should say between Seattle or Vancouver and the Canadian border, does that, per that victim, do they have a criminal prosecution brought by the Canadian authorities and then when they enter our waters, it's ours? Or is it the U.S. District Court that they go to when they're in our waters on a foreign flag vessel like that? Or do you know?
Through the chair, I believe if they're in our territory, we could prosecute a crime against our state laws if they occurred in our territorial waters. If they're in Canadian waters, the Canadian government would have jurisdiction, or the flag of the, possibly the flagship. That the flagship of the boat has jurisdiction no matter, I mean, if wherever it is. I mean, our United States government has prosecuted crimes occurring in rivers in Africa if they were committed on a U.S. flagged vessel. If they occurred between Bellingham and Canadian waters, I assume they could be prosecuted by the Washington authorities if they were in Washington territories.
I guess that's where I get really confused about these jurisdictional questions, because it's almost frightening if you think about tourists
on a boat that may be registered in the Seychelles Islands or some darn place, and some incident occurs, and you're not really sure at the time, specifically Dixon Entrance, whose waters are you in? We have a large gray zone down there we fight over with the Canadians all the time with our fishing fleets. Technically, whose waters were you in at the time it occurred? Whose jurisdiction is it under? Is the crime going to be prosecuted in the Seychelles Islands? And you're probably dealing, or could very easily be dealing, with two different foreign nationals involved. You might have a crew member that's perpetrated a crime, and the crew member is from Italy, maybe, and the victim is from Mexico. I think that all becomes very confusing. I think at least as far as our state-owned vessels, we ought to have some continuity, and I'm assuming that your department supports this legislation.
Yes, we do. Through the chair, we do indeed.
Is there any reason why we shouldn't encompass, instead of waiting for some bizarre event to occur and find out that we can't prosecute that fellow either that was on the airplane, maybe consider some of Senator Ward's concerns about, and I'm not even sure if it has to be a state-owned or operated aircraft. Maybe one registered or resident within this state or operated by somebody within this state. There's an awful large landmass sitting out there that people fly back and forth over all the time in various private and corporate-owned Alaska Airlines, and we certainly fly our state twin-engine pressurized aircraft to Seattle very frequently, if the governor's travel log is any indication of how often that aircraft goes out of state. So rather than wait for something to come up, you know, not that I would assume anything's going to happen on the governor's airplane, but I mean, I think we have a fleet right now in public safety and fish and game alone of somewhere between 46 and 52 different aircraft, and that doesn't include 8 or 10 helicopters. And those could easily be over Canadian airspace or international. All we got to be 3 miles out, and I guess they're international airspace at that point. So,
well, through the chair, most of our state aircraft do operate in the state, but I can understand you wanting to include state-owned aircraft outside the state. The problem in terms of boats for us has not necessarily been international waters, because we have a statute that says where the federal government can exercise jurisdiction, the state can also, and that has allowed us to prosecute under our theft statutes for crab pot theft outside of the 3 mile limit in international waters because of the connection. And it has to do, the issues generally deal with due process, whether or not it's fair under the circumstances with the connection between our state and the offense and the circumstances around it, whether it's fair for us to exercise jurisdiction. But on a state-owned aircraft, that would probably be similar to a state-owned ferry.
I was just thinking it might be something to consider, and I thought Senator Ward's point was pretty well taken. Thank you.
Senator Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I didn't know about the other person that had been convicted on a previous decision until just now when the senator had mentioned it and you had confirmed it, and where they had taken a different position in Canadian waters. If in fact we pass this law, whoever that person is, if they're still in prison, will they then be able to file for an appeal to get out?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, I don't think I understand your question.
Has somebody been arrested? A judge made a different decision other than this judge. The first judge said, you are going to get prosecuted for raping some lady on the ferry. Okay, that person's in jail. We now, if in fact we pass this law, will that first person be able to utilize the passage of this law to file an appeal for a reconsideration of their verdict?
Through the chair, I don't believe so. This bill would give the state jurisdiction to prosecute and explicitly do so.
And would it also set in the, if I might, Mr. Chairman, would it set an argument up that the first person that's in prison for rape was not there legally because the state really did not have jurisdiction as proven by passing this law?
I don't believe that we will be able to prosecute the person.
I'm talking about the first person. One's already in jail.
For this person, I don't believe that they would be able to use this bill as...
They would not be able to, as an appeal.
This bill gives us jurisdiction.
But it also implies that they did not have jurisdiction when they convicted the first person.
Through the chair, no, I don't believe so. I mean, I think this makes explicit a position that we have taken in the lower court.
Maybe I'm just misunderstanding, Mr. Chairman.
If I could help here with you.
Yeah, Senator Taylor.
The case is on appeal. There's going to be a decision made eventually, I hope, by our Supreme Court as to whether or not Judge Weeks was correct in denying jurisdiction to our state in those waters. Now, if the Supreme Court comes down and says, no, you had jurisdiction all along, Larry was wrong on this one, then the guy that was convicted in Ketchikan is justly convicted and there's no problem. If the Supreme Court comes down the other way and says, yes, Judge Weeks was correct, it was a failure and lack of jurisdiction that prevents this prosecution from going forward, yes, then at that point, jurisdictional questions are always before the court. There's not really a statute of limitations on those, or not to the same extent. And as a consequence, if the court did not have jurisdiction to have convicted that first man, I would think he would have some right to appeal that conviction and ask that it be expunged or whatever, if in fact, because by this point in time, I'm sure he's probably served his time and paid his fine, and I'm sure he's an upstanding citizen today, you know, but I would think that that would be the scenario that would occur. It would turn primarily on the Supreme Court's decision. Our enacting a law merely confirming or reasserting our jurisdiction is only going to be effective from that date forward anyhow. But it would not really play upon the earlier case because it's not a negative. It's not saying we admit we didn't have jurisdiction. It's just saying we're now further asserting and clarifying it. So I think it would be fine either way, but I don't want to see the state drop the appeal just because we passed the law.
We are pursuing the appeal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator from Wrangell.
Okay. Is there anyone else to testify? Anyone online? No? What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill number 405 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Hearing none, so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, yeah, see if you can work us up an amendment.
We're adjourned.
Yeah.